This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show. Podcast or go-to place for the modern legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me this week, our guest host of the month, the patron of chaos himself, Alex Smith. How are you?
Hello. Thank you. Glad to be back. Of the month.
Of the month.
I feel obligated. You got to get me like an employee plaque now, right? Just so I can end up like having that, like, you know, in my back pocket as the reference. Just so you know, Dark Depths Podcast, February 2024. Co-host of the month. Mm-hmm. Look, Mapson isn't going to have February 2024.
Nope, not at all. I definitely appreciate you coming back. Last week, we had a ton of fun. Obviously, we had a lot of things to talk about leading up to the RC in Denver. And now that you're back, you can tell us a little bit about it as well. And we can dig into some of the results that we had from Denver as well as from Ottawa. I believe the Canadian one was in Ottawa, so we can check that one out too.
Yeah, of course.
So how was your RC experience? I guess before we get into the nitty-gritty of Magic, like, how was Denver? How was your flight? How was the hotel? All that fun stuff.
Oh, okay, so fun stuff. Flight's flight, right? Like, personally speaking, I never like going east to west coast. Or rather, that's a lie. I like going east to west, because you feel like you're traveling back in time, and you're like, man, I have so much time available still, right?
Yeah.
Where it doesn't, it's 4.5 hours, but you get there, and you're like, wow, it's only been 2.5 hours, or, oh my god, you go, like, all the way to California, right, like 3 hours, you're like, whoa, it just feels like a cheat, right? You're like, I still have a day, or I still have time to get dinner, whatever. So I like going east to west. Immediately found out. So I ended up staying with, you know, our friend Ian, and we stayed in downtown Denver. Denver, by the way, my first time ever going. A lot of fun, beautiful city. Great, right? Our location right in the heart of downtown Denver.
Beautiful,
fantastic. You wanna know one of the nice things about this trip too, Billy? You know, we're getting a little bit older, so we kind of like appreciate some of the nice quality of life things, like, you know, being close to the venue, right?
Oh, of course.
So
gotta
be close to the venue, right? So, you know, we got that downtown Denver hotel, you know, a couple blocks away from downtown Denver Convention Center, right? Like, oh, just perfect.
Beautiful.
Guess where the event wasn't, Billy?
Was it not at that convention center?
It was not at that convention center.
No.
It was 35 minutes away in Aurora.
Oh, no.
In Aurora, Colorado. So still Denver, technically. It's like a suburb or part of, like, Denver. But
you got the SEG Philly treatment. That's what that is.
No, it's so funny because we talked about that. I'm just like, this can't be real. I was like, we just talked about how it's like, isn't it so funny that they call these things after the city and then they're not actually in the city? Guess what? It happened. We did it. Happy circumstance though, right? Like, it was still nice being downtown, just Ubering to and from the venue was still fine, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say I was a little disappointed personally from like DreamHack, because everybody has been like hyping up to me, like this was my first DreamHack like RC going to, and everybody like was hyping them up because I've heard so much good stuff about like Atlanta, right? From everybody we know that went there, said it was a great time, huge like vendors from everywhere, not just Magic, video game vendors, booth girls, right? Cosplays, like a million and a half different things going on, and you kind of come to this, and I'm like, look, it's really this was not a great venue, right? Not a great venue. It's just not a great venue. Smaller than like a SCG tour, to like I would say almost like quality wise. Nothing to say not about like the actual event runnings itself. It's just I think it was very much kind of like just a venue thing. So I wish they kind of picked a better venue. Not to, again, not to say anything about the actual weekend, but yeah, definitely could have been room for improvement. So, especially with that being the case, also ended up being happy that we were not close to it and we were in downtown Denver. So it works out, right? So Denver was great, travel was fine. Always good food, right? All that kind of stuff. So yeah, just actually getting there was very good. My general like RC experience, right? So we know I was trying to LCQ with the best of them, right? I can certainly say I tried, right?
You tried?
I tried. I did my best, everybody, it started off on a really high note. So very first one for me personally, I ended up making it to the semis, right? And you're like, cool, you're gonna try to like grind out rounds and everything, and you're like, all right. So the very first LC of the day, I'm like, all right, look, semis, we got this, right? You're feeling hot, feeling good. Second one, quarters, okay, all right, okay. And then like third one, like in and out. I'm like, all right, after three, it's like, so. Yeah, but it definitely modern seems, and we'll get into it once we get into the RC, but at least, like physically paper to cards at the table and everything, I could tell you I saw all kinds of decks, at least some of the ones like are the ones that we expect. And then look, it's just like any tournament, you're still gonna end up seeing some homebrew where you're like, hey, you know what, I'm glad for you, buddy. I didn't think I was gonna see you here, but it happens, right?
It does happen. Yeah, and that's like one of the best things about Modern, I think, right now. Especially, there's a number of cards that I did not expect to actually make waves the way that they did. And I think you kind of see the same ripple effect, stampede, if you want to say that, across the multiple formats that really. If you had told me 2 weeks ago, hey, this card is printed in the new set, it's going to make a huge impact, got to watch out for it, I'd be like, nah, that's just not true. Don't be mean.
I love that too. Like you're seeding that already. I'm like, you want to talk about that card, or are we gonna talk about that card later?
We will get there very soon, I'm pretty sure.
We'll get there soon.
If we're gonna talk about Denver, I know you. We should probably just start with it soon, because I feel like it just kind of a giant effect over what happened over the weekend. So I think it's probably good to get out of the
We
way.
can. I do want to add, just as a little like cherry on top here, before we get delve fully into it, listeners, I know this is a Modern Legacy podcast. I'm gonna pat myself on the back a little bit. I tried to represent the for Modern representation. Mapson, he'll give you his side of the story from his representation, but I'm February host of the month. I tried,
Of
right?
course.
But I did Audible Saturday, and I ended up going into a sealed 10K. That we cashed.
Okay.
So,
All right.
not a bad look, not a bad weekend for your boy. Still,
No.
cashing the 10K still paid for the weekend. So, we were very happy with that outcome.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's always good. Being able to make that bottom line a little more black, a little less red is always
The
good.
wife is always happy to hear that funds are even. When it comes to
That's the
magic
dream.
travel, it's like, we're even, honey. We're okay.
Well, okay, so if we're gonna start talking about, some unexpected gains, let's start talking about I guess ley lines. We can start there. The one card that I'm gonna no, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna start with an apology. Not for me, because I didn't slander this. Social media, I feel like last week, 2 weeks ago, was just like, who in the hell made Leyline Guild Pact? Who is that for? What garbage card? Why would they print this? Why is it five different colors but only four pips?
They think domain's still a thing. Domain is so, what, Billy? 2003, right? It's, come on. It's ancient. It's history.
I'm going to bust out my wild Nacatl, I guess.
Come on.
Get my tribal flames.
Come on. Can't be good. Can't be good. Who wants it?
Can't be good. No. For those who haven't seen this, Leyline of the Guild Pact is the newest addition to the Leyline family. Obviously, it has that Leyline condition. If it's in your opening hand, you can begin with it on the battlefield. Each non-land permanent you control is all colors, and lands you control are every basic land type in addition to the other types. And again, the mana cost is kind of all over the place. It's a bunch of hybrid. Everything's green, and then it's one of each color or green. That's kind of your option for paying it.
I respect the hell out of you, because I know there was no chance in hell I was going to try to get that mana pips.
Nope. Not at all. It's brutal. Yeah. You got to take shortcuts
sometimes. Hey, it doesn't matter, right? It's in your opener. It's free.
Yeah.
You think you're going to pay mana for this? Come on.
Never. I guess the nice thing about this, though, is that if all your lands are all the types, they make all the mana, so...
Each non-land permanent, all your lands.
All your lands. Okay, so... If you're going to have Leyline of the Guild Pact in your deck, you might as well play some pretty sweet cards. One of the ones that ends up being pretty sweet is Scion of Draco, which is a card, we've actually seen in a lot of those zoo-type decks before, so that it's not like it's a card we've never heard of. The fact that it becomes all colors, though, and all your lands are all land types, means that you can very easily just play a 2-mana 4/4 with Vigilance, Hexproof, Lifelink, First Strike, and Trample. On turn two, with two, off of two basics, it's very impressive that this card, and essentially how many times I've seen Leyline of the Guild Pact and Scion of Draco slotted into a deck.
So 2-mana for a 4/4, that's Hexproof, Vigilance, that's good?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay.
I actually played against this in Legacy, too, and, believe it or not, I actually won the one game because I had a giant... I think I ended up winning with, a 17-17 Murktide. That's the reason why I won.
Yeah.
It's very hard to race that card, especially when you're talking about that in Modern. It's a very powerful card. And you're playing Leyline of the Guild Pact, obviously making Scion of Draco better, but you also get to make your Leyline bindings consistently cost 1 mana, which is a huge addition. I'm just surprised by the deck. I did not have this on my 2024 bingo card, so I am just shocked to see how effective and how adopted this card actually was over this weekend.
It was the talk of the weekend of the tournament. I can tell you the main event very much halfway through the first day, everybody was just talking about it, and literally all of the vendors there ended up selling out of ley lines. So, mm-hmm. It ended up making enough of a splash that everybody was just like, wow, actually seeing, that's the power of seeing the card in effect, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody very quickly realized, Scion, 2-mana for the 4/4, all of those abilities, and then also coincidentally, giving rhinos all of those abilities, also pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having a 4/4 trampling hexproof rhino, just a lot of the regular avenues of attack get cut off pretty quickly, because something like a Fatal Push, obviously very nice, doesn't really do much when you can't target it. I think as far as having the Draco and the Leyline in play with rhinos, your big option to get rid of the rhinos, at least, is Engineered Explosives, which I do think that's a pretty good answer. But if you're trying to get rid of the actual Scion, there's really not a lot of things you can do outside of combat, and that really does put you in a really difficult position. The one answer I've been seeing has been Shieldred's Edict. Just because it's a powerful card anyways in other matchups. But again, that's not really a card we're seeing so much in Modern, more of a Legacy card. So,
mm-hmm. For Modern, really, the main enemy is kind of still just the always existing enemy for Rhinos, Living End, right?
Mm-hmm.
Living, it It's one of those things where it's like, I think it kind of like helps, and obviously, you know, data's still not completely out yet, right? People, I'm sure, will end up trying this flavor of rhinos versus, you know, the more stock list of rhinos to see how it ends up shaking up. I would at least say, kind of, you know, seeing the deck and talking to everybody about it throughout the weekend, it seems that this list kind of just actually closes the gap for a lot of the matchups that were already like winnable for rhinos, but, you know, this obviously kind of unexpectedly, you know, mostly because people also weren't prepared for it. But for those fairer matchups, it kind of helped like shore up rhinos. And, you know, I think I would prefer that more so than trying to make like my worst matchup a little bit better. So I think, you know, Scion and Leyline are ultimately going to be end up being better for the deck than being like, oh, it still loses to, you know, Living End. The deck was always losing to Living End. So.
Yeah, that's not changing. And honestly, I think that's, you know, going into the weekend, if you had to say what deck am I going to play against a lot, right? I think Rhinos was a good option. I think Living End was a little lower on that. But obviously it ended up being a really good choice. Shout out to, I'm not even sure, MTGDecks.net. They ended up posting a win matrix based off of the RC. Including, just make sure I'm being accurate here, DreamHack Denver qualifiers, US Regional Championship, as well as the Canadian Regional Championship, which we'll talk about as well, and then also the Champions Cup final at Big Magic as well. But Living ended up being the one of the best performing decks at 55%. But you know, we see Rhinos 51% kind of doing its thing. I think that's it's consistently that 51, 50, 51, 49% deck where it's like, I can beat all the good matchups because I'm a better player than my opponent. So you end up seeing that kind of 50-50 kind of spread across a lot of situations. But like, if you're playing Rhinos, like, was it 56% good win rate versus Yawgmoth, 59% versus Titan, 60 versus Scam, like, even Creativity, which ended up having a really good weekend as well, 60% there. Like, that is all pretty solid, but you do have to balance that out with the 35% versus Living End. That's kind of the trade-off.
Do you want to end up getting into the standings for Denver first, or how do you want to break it down?
We'll talk about Denver, the standings here. So, I mean, shout out to the top two lists, Devin Straub and Mech Indris, obviously being able to go to Worlds, in addition to obviously having just a fantastic weekend, great, and then the rest of the top eight, including Andrew Varel, friend of a friend. Andrew is actually one of the people, when I think of people playing Scape Shift, I'm like, that is the person who, if you're playing Scape Shift versus, or playing against Scape Shift with Andrew Varel, you are in trouble. So I was like, oh, great, he made top eight, probably playing Scape Shift. I'm like, oh no, he's off that. He's on five color creativity. But you know, we ended up having two copies of Yawgmoth in the top eight. We ended up
Three.
having Ryan. Three. Oh, geez. Yeah, there is a third one. Miss Chandler Cox. So three copies of Yawgmoth. We got a couple copies of Rhinos. Obviously, one ended up having the Ley Line of the Guild Pack, one did not. And then a copy of Living End, a copy of Yawgmoth, and the aforementioned Five Color Creativity. You know, I don't think you're getting a ton of new innovation from the Yawgmoth list. They seem like they're pretty stock at this point. I do like the Colony Garden in Devin's list, but I think that's like the big difference I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, that's kind of the only difference that I ended up seeing between the lists.
I mean, I think that deck is like very much, if we're not at what the perfect, quote unquote, perfect list is right now, I think we have to be pretty close. We talked about Macindreth playing this kind of ley line of the Guild Pact version of Rhinos, the Domain Rhinos with our Sign of Draco. But, you know, the Team of Rhinos list just straight up still a really solid choice. I think that was a really good deck going into the weekend.
Yeah, and from, you know, a lot of people that we know from our area ended up on this list, and also just around the general tournament, seemed to kind of be on this like stock list where it really, really was close between, like, team to team, person to person, maybe 1 to 2 cards off, where it's like you're playing with the number of flames, you're playing with, you know, the number of tide binders, but I don't think between the stock list of rhinos there was really much variance that I ever saw outside of the domain deck, obviously.
Yeah. And, like, the domain list, I do obviously like what they were doing there, but, like, you know, you adding 4 copies of Sign of Draco, 4 copies of Leyline of the Guild Pact, like, there is definitely a trade-off there in terms of what your deck is able to do and how it's able to do it. Jacob Koshak and Andrew Varel, obviously playing different lists. They're playing Omnath, 4-color Omnath for Jacob, 5-color Creativity for Andrew Varel, but I think the important part to kind of point out about both of those lists is that they are both decks that are very, very happy to be playing a Teferi Time Raveler on turn 3, or maybe even turn 2 if you're playing Jacob's list with the it's definitely still turn 3. In my mind, this had the
you're thinking of Halfling.
The Halfling, yeah, but we're not Halfling in this version.
We're not Halfling.
No, just a fulling. I think they're both really solid choices, though, in terms of, you know, the expected Rhino's numbers. I think having Teferi Time Raveler in your deck was a really solid choice.
You were very happy to be eating some Rhinos with the Teferi in your deck. Mm-hmm. Trust me, they feasted very well this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine that. Yeah, the Mac actually has... or Jacob, rather, ended up having the 4 copies of Teferi, but also 2 copies of Chalice the Void in the main deck. That is the choice, which I appreciate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, past that, you still have some interesting things out of the creativity list, too. I mean, like, I like the numbers on some of these spells. Like, I kind of expect to see some number of Reprieve. I think that card's, again, very good if you're expecting people to be playing Cascade spells. I think that's obviously very solid. But even Mana Tide is another one that I'm like, oh, that's very cute.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Reprieve is always just one of those ones where, I mean, it feels right for you, mm-hmm. not for your opponent.
Oh, never, yeah. Not for them.
No.
there's just so many spells, too, in this format. Like, you know, being able to, like, bounce back somebody's Solitude or, you know, Subtlety, like, that is still backbreaking.
Yeah, not
putting the ring back in their hand.
Yeah, not actually countering anything is also, you know, relevant for certain spots where, you know, they can end up actually giving something, like, uncounterable or whatever, too. So it always still, I think, like, in the back of some people's minds, just, like, gets them, depending on, you know, obviously, look, it's an RC, you're going to end up getting a whole... better player, but still a whole slew of different grade of players here, too. It's also one of those things where I think initially some players just aren't going to expect it until they see it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of those cards, even though you have the ability to play them, it's the first time you see it, you're like, oh, that's how we're doing it. And again, those small differences, I think, too, kind of add up over the course of a tournament. Especially in one like this, like with RCs, especially if you're at the top tables, people tend to see what you're playing, that little spice, a little sooner than later.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So I could imagine.
You know, you got to remember, right? This entire event was open deck list, right? So
oh, yeah.
It's the possibility, like, it's almost more so just the possibility for your opponent, right? Where it's like, you might not even have it, and they might have a Rhino coming off suspend, and they're just like, you know, it's the dread. That's what I mean. It's the dread.
I'm not sure if there's anything else that you in particular want to talk about from Denver,
as
far as decklists are concerned.
Not particularly as far as, like, anything that really put up results. The only fun list is the thing that we talked about before we ended up starting recording here. I would kind of say people initially were cheering on for the weekend. It's Jody K's Mono White Martyr list. So,
yeah.
Fought the good fight, right? Lost their winning in. But yeah, just seeing a Mono White Martyr list end up popping up, I heard that coming around in the room. It's like, have you seen this list? Well, again, right? You're coming into the weekend. We talked about it previously. Everybody's expecting Yogg. Everybody's expecting Titan. Everybody's expecting, you know, Rhinos, Scam. Nobody was expecting a Martyr list to obviously show up. Heck, I can't even tell you the last time I even saw a Martyr list.
Yeah, it has been a minute. For those at home who do not remember Martyr of Sands, it's one white for a 1/1 human cleric. You can pay one, reveal X cards from your hand, and sacrifice Martyr of Sands to gain 3x X life. So, you know, you pay one mana, you reveal 3 cards, you'll gain 9 life, which is very cool. Yeah, this is, and again, I actually didn't realize the pilot, if it's Jody Kay, I'm assuming this is Jody Keith, who is like is well known for playing a lot of these like kind of tight white creature packages in basically every format he's allowed to play them in. And like, he's a big Eagles of the North aficionado, for example, which is, I think, often regarded as the worst in the cycle, but he makes it work. And he obviously does pretty good results. 32nd place at the RC is definitely nothing to sneeze at. And looking at some of the people he played against LSV, played against Richard Neal, Roy Varney, Jason Chan, Sampar D, ended up actually losing the win and end to Andrew Varel as well. Like, this is a very, very good pilot who actually went through and took down some really tough competition. So, you know, shout out to Jody Kay, whoever you are. But I do like this list. I mean, it just has a lot of cards that we don't typically see in Modern. Things like Kami of False Hope, and obviously, I think Skycleave Apparition does see play, but sees significantly less than
it used to. Yeah,
it used to. Yeah, I do like also like CEDH All Star Winds of Abandon. That is continues to be a beating, but also like Wrath of God is in here. We are doing the Reprieve goodness.
We were fighting the good fight with this list for sure. This, again, you know, towards the end of the first day here, I heard about, you know, this deck, and it was very much, people were like, this is our champion. this is who can take down the room full of rhinos and yogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is like one of those decks that we don't get to talk about a lot, but like, it got some really big pickups. Abiding Grace, for example, has been a huge addition. For those who do not remember this, Modern Horizons 2 All-Star. It's 2 generic and a white for an enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, choose one, you gain 1 life, or you return target creature card from with mana value 1 from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is a free way for you to just
get your martyrs.
Turn after turn, get martyr back. Yeah, that seems good to me.
I mean, it's like, and we can get off it, right? I know Jody K here fought the good fight and wasn't even in the top here, but it's just, it's so interesting to me, to your credit, because you don't see a list like this, right? I mean, the list is running 3 Demolition Field and 3 Field of Ruin, and I'm just like, you know, yeah, like, that makes a lot of sense to me right now, because of 4 color, because of Titan, you know, even because of Rhinos, right? Because, again, one of the things that I kept seeing from, like, Rhinos players, and you can end up seeing from Jody K here, who played Rhinos, and I'm sure, look, LSV was on Rhinos for the weekend, we see that. LSV can probably attest to you, most of the lists for Rhinos cut the basics, because they're now playing the Surveil lands. So, you feel the ruin them, and they're not gonna be able to get anything. Like, you just, it's just, hey, blow up your land. It's just gone.
It's gone.
Just, yeah, definitely, I think, took advantage of the weekend. So, always fun to see a list like this pop up and maybe not, you know, win it, but still do pretty well. It's like you said, 32nd. Did we even mention this was the largest RC in America? History?
No, that's insane.
Yeah, so listeners, for everybody, just so you're aware, there was over 1,300 people at this RC competing in the main, which is absolutely ludicrous. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to me that there's that many people.
And like, you get a RC invite for top 32, or PT invite and RC invite. So like, Jody, I guess, just made the cut. Good on ya. But I mean, fighting for 32 PT invites out of 1,300 people is not good odds.
Mm-mm. Talk about a percentage of a percentage, right? We can move over to, if you want, we can move over to Ottawa, where I would have liked my odds a lot better.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Eagles of the North to the White North. Ottawa ended up actually being won by the Blue-White Control list, which we've actually seen a couple other lists doing well in the U.S. I believe one of the... No, I'm thinking of a different tournament, but the Blue-White list was one of the kind of breakout stars, I believe. I think with Patrick Wu, who ended up getting third, ended up calling this like Blue-White Zookeeper, which I think is adorable. Just because apparently the Rhinos matchup was very, very good.
Again, especially like look for this top eight here. There's five Rhino decks in Ottawa's top mm-hmm. eight, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, that it is. Jeez. Yeah, I guess shout out for the top eight here. Don't know too many people here, but obviously Patrick Wu, Numdying, Pascal Maynard just on the outside of the top eight there. But you end up getting like two copies of Blue White Control,
five copies of Rhinos, and one Living End.
Living End. So, like, we are cascading hard here. And having a Blue White deck that has, I guess, between Jonathan Deary, who ended up winning, having three copies of Teferi or Time Raveler in the deck, Patrick Rue having three copies as well. You start adding in copies of Reprieve, which we talked about, and between the two lists, they have eight copies. Like, I think, I could be wrong, I think their decks are, if not exactly the same, they're cards away.
Yeah, just taking a brief glance at it, it looks like they're pretty close here.
Yeah. I actually like that idea, right? Like, it's not overly fancy, it is just kind of ending games eventually, and being able to have these really strong pitch spells and Solitude, Subtlety, being able to back that up with a really efficient removal and some uncounterable removal spells and in terms of, like, you know, Supreme Verdict and things like that, like, this is a good strategy, I think, right now. Like, the format is very aggressive and very unfair, and this is very fair.
Yep. Exactly as you said. It's like, hey, the deck's designed to end up feasting on the people who are trying to do free things. So, a lot of people are trying to do that right now.
Yeah. Obviously, this is not a deck that you or I are particularly likely to play. I don't think you and I are Blue-White Control mages at this point in our Magic careers, but the one thing I think that is super, super spicy that I think made waves over the weekend, one being, and I guess looking at the sideboards, they definitely are opting for some different cards. I do like Temporary Lockdown, which is actually something Jody Keith was playing in his main deck as well. I do like the copy in Jonathan Deary's sideboard of Curse of Silence. For those who don't remember that one, that is from Midnight Hunt. It's a single white enchant player. As Curse of Silence enters the battlefield, choose a card name. Spells with the chosen name enchanted player cast cost two more to cast. Whenever enchanted player casts a spell with the chosen name, you may sacrifice Curse of Silence if you do draw a card. So you can very easily put that down on turn one, and, you know, every time they try to cast a Crashing Footfalls, it's going to cost you two more, which is not why you're playing that card. The other one that has been made, this was like the big thing on social media that I thought was enjoyable, Patrick Wu sideboard. Again, very similar main deck to Jonathan. The sideboards are very different. I do like the Trick Bind.
I saw the Trick Bind. I was like, this is sweet tech.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you do not want to lose to that Cascade trigger, that is one good way to do it.
The second one, right?
The second one, yeah. Declaration of Naught.
I love this card in the sideboard here.
It's so good. For those who haven't seen Declaration of Naught, it is double blue-blue for an enchantment from, I believe that's Morning Tide.
It is.
It is, okay. As Declaration of Naught comes into play, name a card, pay a blue, counter target spell with that name. That's it. That's all it does.
Talk about, like, the most... Again, this just goes to show you, like, how ready everybody for the weekend was for Rhinos. Talk about, like, the most targeted sideboard hate you can possibly think of. You're just like, I know I'm going to want to counter that spell every single time. And I'm fine that this is all this card's going to stop.
Yeah, and, like, it's... You know, we're looking at a format where, like, you... If they resolve... Crashing Footfalls, they don't necessarily win the game, but like that is, if they're in a really good spot.
Yeah.
And if they don't ever resolve that spell, you're in a pretty good spot. So like putting in answers into your deck that make sure that that happens in your favor, not theirs, I respect it.
Absolutely.
Especially what was Rhino was like, was it 20% of the field or something crazy like that at
in Denver? Denver is 22. That's what I mean. It was 22. And it just, it really felt, it felt more than 22. Like, let me just tell you, everybody, just, everybody, if you weren't Rhinos, you had a dedicated, like, we're pretty close to where if you weren't Rhinos, your deck had a very much dedicated plan to beat Rhinos. So, even if you weren't on the deck, your entire deck's plan was just beating that deck. So, well, look, to Rhinos' credit, still, you know, people came out swinging, and... Obviously, it's still placed in both of these RCs. Multiple decks in both top eights. So, and multiple versions of both decks, right? Like, even Domain even made it over here in Ottawa, too. So, you know, multiple versions of the Rhino decks in both top eights here. So, decks still got legs. People came, you know, prior to the weekend. We talked about it last week, even. Like, it was going to be the deck of the weekend. So, people knew they had to come prepared. And even coming prepared, you can't stop the zoo. In fact, the zoo's growing. We're making everything. We're making it everything zoo now. Everything's Domain.
I mean, and like it's funny too, because like it just seems like it gets easier and easier to make everything want to be multiple colors. Obviously, we, you know, Leyline of the Guild Pact aside, obviously that's a very easy way to make everything all colors. But like I think Surveil Lands. There's another card, we haven't really talked about them explicitly, but, like, they have been popping up in every list, just one or two here or there.
Everybody for the weekend, like, every list, every deck, had, it. Obviously, you know, maybe Burn or Rakdos withstanding, right? Like, some of the very aggressive decks. Every list had at least one. Like, that's another one, right? You know, Leyline went crazy from the vendors. Most of the vendors ended up selling out of pretty much all their Surveil lands. So I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but I feel like last week, I bought a couple copies of mine, and each one was like a dollar. If you wanted to look at it now, each one's like five, like the secret's out, right? I think people have realized they've had a week to play with them now. It's like a $5-$6 or whatever card. People just realize it's like, you know what? I don't think this is ever going to be an effect you want like a four of, obviously. But, you know, for some of these decks, Rhinos in particular, and I'm sure, you know, Azorius Control, like just turn one, being able to like fetch, you know, Surveil one, it's just good enough. It does what you want. It does the filter. You can throw it in the yard for the benefit of, you know, something else too, like getting it back or Murktide or like it just does enough. And it's just so free. Being able to get it off of Lorwyn, right? Like it's the fact that it's the types as well. It just really makes it just pop that much more.
Yeah, and the idea of like, and again, these decks are maybe not the target audience, but like something like Living End, for example, like the fact that I can go get a land that produces two of my colors, and then also I can put this creature from the top of my deck on top of, into my graveyard, get me one card closer to getting my, you know, cascade spell that I'm actually looking for. It just does enough of everything well enough that, like, I'm just constantly happy to see them. And it's, you know, I'm seeing them a little bit in Legacy now, too, popping up. Like, it's just an effect that is just good. Like, I constantly want a little bit extra edge. I do want my two colors. I can only play, you know, four copies of my Breeding Pool, or I can only play four copies of my Underground Sea. Like, having a fifth... playing that Hedge Mage or having that, Under City Sewer or whatever that the blue black one is, mm-hmm. It It's meaningful. It's just meaningful.
It just does exactly what you need when you need it. Because, yeah, like you said, so many of those decks. Look, even Living End, I just checked both of the top 8 Living End decks. They're both at least playing one, right?
Yeah.
Because, again, it does what you want. So, it. I certainly didn't expect the lands to... I knew they were going to be good, right? We all saw Surveil, and we all know Surveil is more powerful than Scry. But it's like actually being in the hands of competitors for the weekend, I think everybody's just realized, like, this is great. This is exactly what I wanted to do, while not, obviously, people saying, like, oh, it's, like, busted. It's just very efficient, and it's good at what it does. You're always going to want, I think, in any of your lists, at least in the near future, to have at least that one copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, much of the, again, I don't know if there's anything else we really need to talk about, as far as, like, standings are concerned. Obviously, there's just so much rhinos here, in Canada. I didn't realize they had large animals like that.
I was gonna say,
like, moose people.
Yeah, I know, like, my geography's just gotta be, like, pretty rough there, because I didn't think Canada, could support this many large mammals.
No, yeah. Man, Ottawa Zoo, crazy. Yeah, the decks in general, I think, seem pretty, just, I guess, obviously top-heavy towards those Cascade decks, particularly Rhinos. And we do see some other decks that I don't think would do as well, kind of, I don't want to say capitalize on it, but, like, something like Mono Blue Tron, Gavin Bennett. Not a deck that I kind of expected to do well in this sort of field, but... looking at his matchups, he was in 13th, ended up having, I guess, an okay time versus Rhinos, right? It looks like he went 3-1, which I'm happy with at an Arthi, so I think that's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a deck potentially to look for. You know, I guess it makes sense. You're playing things like Ugin. You've got 4 copies of... Tashama's Tidebinder, which seems really good if you're worried about the Cascade trigger. Also, a couple copies of, like, four copies of Force of Negation in the deck, too. You got the One Ring. Like, I could imagine this being a really easy way to bide some time while you try to stabilize from a couple Rhinos early.
I'm not going to let you get away with that. The people can't let you get away with that.
What do you mean? Whatever do you mean?
You know what you did.
Then also in 17th place, the other one I think that's, I think, a sneaky winner is Merfolk. Just because, like, you're already playing a deck that wants Island Walk, and then, like, people are willingly just, like, jamming Leyline of the Guild Pact in their deck. They want blue mana. And if I'm looking at the top lists, you know, above Merfolk here, all but two of them are playing blue cards, like, intentionally. Like, they want to play blue cards. So playing Merfolk, I think, actually ends up being a kind of a cheat code here when your opponents are doing half the work for you.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Talk about the win rates here. Again, Living End had a really good weekend. Blue-White Control had a very good weekend. It looks like 4-Color Cascade. I'm not sure exactly what that entails here, but those decks at least had a pretty solid showing. It seems like everyone else was about average in that, like, you know, 50 to 45% range. The Hammer Time, I actually expected to have a little bit better of a weekend overall, but... it seems like that ended up at, what, 49%. We didn't see any copies in the top 8 of either of those RCs we looked at. Kind of disappointed there. I'm not sure if any other deck stood out to you in terms of good or bad.
You want to know what we didn't see, really, at all? So I'm like, maybe it's really falling off here. Scam.
Oh, wow, wait, really? Oh, yeah, I guess we didn't. Jeez.
Between either tournament. Like, I don't even know if it's in, like, top 16, let alone, like, top 8. Top 24, maybe?
You know, Jonathan Salem ended up getting 12th with Scam.
Okay.
And which is good. Well, I mean, obviously.
I know, but it's one deck. I kind of thought Scam, you know, could go a little bit more toe-to-toe with Yogg and Rhinos, but maybe it's just kind of on the downtick right now.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, 48% win percentage overall, which is fine. I mean, serviceable. 40% versus Rhinos, which if that's the top deck,
it's pretty bad.
What you want to see? Yeah, pretty good versus Amulet Titan though, but I don't think we saw as much Titan as you would have hoped.
I think it's probably just like a time thing, right? Where it's like, you know, especially we don't have to talk about it too much just because obviously the deck hasn't performed. But I'm thinking it's kind of mostly like pilots with Rhinos have figured out. For Scam, the deck kind of really revolves around Dothy, right? Mm-hmm. For that matchup at least, where it's almost like a sub game, where if they end up actually having a Dothy stick around, Rhinos isn't going to win. So I think most of the pilots know for Rhinos, right? They're like, if they just get rid of that card, the matchup's actually pretty okay for them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we actually have seen, I'm glad you actually said that too. There's a number of lists that I've been seeing that have, if they're not already in the main deck, they have like a Bonecrusher Giant or something like that in the sideboard. Obviously, Rhinos already does have things like Dead Gone. You've got things like Fire Ice. You got Flame of Honor. Like, you have plenty of ways to actually remove a two toughness creature. So it definitely does make sense that you, if that is something in mind that you know you have to deal with, like, just wait, hold it. They can't counter it. I mean, like, the big thing is that they can use, like, Not Dead After All to return it to the battlefield, but, you know, that is kind of the stretch there, the friction.
Yeah, and I mean, the deck already has so many other, like, answers for that, though, I feel like, too, where it's like, mm-hmm. as long as they can end up dealing with the Dothy, I think Rhinos can end up just actually, you know, continue to trample on over everybody.
So, between these two events, obviously one was won by Yawgmoth, one was won by Blue-White Control. Are either of those decks, would you consider either of those decks to be the best deck in the format post-event, or do you think it's still clearly Rhinos?
I mean, I think just looking at both top eights, you can kind of still say it's very much a Rhino world. Again, right, we kind of already ended up alluding to it where the whole point of both events was you're playing Rhinos or your entire deck's game plan is to beat Rhinos. So, I don't know. I still love Modern, right, as a format. Like I said, I did see some of these, like, you know, side brew decks. But I think we're definitely kind of, like, honing in towards that, like, point, right, where I'm like, it's a little tough where it's like, hey, you're either the best deck or you have to be designed to beat the best deck. That's when I'm starting to think, like, you know, what can change here? What can kind of, like, break that dichotomy? Because, yeah, even though Rhinos technically didn't win either of the two events, again, just, you know, standings here. I know the numbers you talked about where it's technically above just 50%. It just seems like most people are still on it. But who knows? Maybe time will tell. Maybe once Yogg settles here, or Blue-White. Blue-White, I think, is, at least for me personally, the most surprising. The deck was around, but obviously it's just kind of like gotten bumped up a little bit just because of the field. So, and I'm sure it's, you know, pilots have something to do with that too as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I know a number of people who were in the Canadian one. I think there was somebody who, I guess I can double check this real quick, but I know somebody who top eighted in Canada, had somebody on their team. Maybe, again, I could be thinking of the wrong team. Maybe them thinking of the U.S., but I believe someone made top 8, top 16, top 32, and also made top 64, like, all from the same same deck list. And again, like, looking at the win rate, 56% overall is great, but 74% versus Teamer Cascade, 75% versus Living End, like, that's great.
That's really good right now.
Yeah. Obviously, the four-color Cascade deck is just the four-color Rhino list. That makes a lot more sense now. I don't know why I didn't think about that before. But that one ended up having 62% win rate versus the Teamer Cascade that was only 51%. So it definitely seems like the Teamer Cascade, or the four-color Cascade with the Guild Pact, seems like that is a markedly jump in win percentage. I don't know if that's because of the surprise factor or the deck is actually just that difficult to play against.
I don't know, right? It's definitely something to end up like thinking about, because I feel like let's kind of like just talk about it. So the domain list versus the non-domain list. You're kind of like subbing what, like Murktides for Scions, right? So you're kind of like just changing, you know, like the threat. But I guess like Scions, you obviously can literally get on turn two, right? Like if you have the starting ley line. So maybe it's kind of like what we were talking about previously. You're just like upping that factor of your ability to really apply that pressure. Because the other Rhinos deck, it's like you're actually not doing anything. I shouldn't say not doing anything, right? But there's no threats until turn three or four. Right? Mm-hmm. Until you can actually cascade. And domain, it's like, that's just not true, right? Like, if you actually have the ley line into Scion on turn two, turns out that's just good. Mm-hmm. So, maybe that's kind of what those extra percentage points are, where they get to kind of, like, you know, put the screws to you a little bit sooner than the normal stock list.
Yeah, I'm like, looking across the board, the matchups all seem they're just better for four color cascade. The only exception is versus the four color creativity list, where it goes from four color cascade is 38% to 59% for teamer cascade, which I think that kind of has to do with the fact that, like, if you are worried about trying to close out the game and present a powerful game plan, that's what you want. But creativity is the one that typically is going to go over the top there, and the teamer list is able to actually play a game that fight that, which I think is more relevant. Like, you are a little bit slower, but you actually have relevant cards in the matchup for you.
Yeah, like, teamer, I mean, they very much so, like, think about it. You know, they're going to be running your Mystical Disputes. They're going to be running, you know, the four full subtleties. They're going to end up, you know, running, you know, just more some kind of, like, counters, probably, where just looking at both of the domain lists that we've seen, those are the cards they're, like, traditionally shaving. Like, I don't see Mystical Disputes in either of the lists. So, you know, they're kind of giving up some of that. Again, like, they're not trying to be reactive, right? They're trying to be more so in the driver's seat.
Yeah, which I think in this format works out pretty well. I think, obviously, blue-white control kind of shows you that, like, you don't need to be pressing people for answers. Like, they will try to come up with their own solutions. You can just, like, you know, give them the reprieve instead. So, it is... It's nice to know that you have the ability to be a little bit slower, but, like, there aren't many decks that do that particularly well. I think Mono Blue Tron, ironically, I guess, is one of those decks that I do think that actually has the ability to put forth a very strong, consistent game plan while also not getting demolished by other decks like the Green Tron and Eldrazi Tron, in my mind, tend to. So maybe that is kind of the secret right now. You just want to be in a spot where either you're punching people in the face so powerfully that they have no way to deal with it, or you want something that is like has the ability to be inevitable towards the end.
Is this what Mapson puts up with every week?
I don't know. What are you talking about? What's wrong? Did I say something?
I've gained so much respect for Mapson. And
oh no.
It's incredible. It's just, does it come naturally to you? Is that what this is?
It literally flows from my mouth, and I cannot stop it. It hurts me as much as it hurts you.
Uh-oh.
And honestly, it wears on me. And the only reason it doesn't wear any worse is because I have Heavy Play. Heavy Play always providing expert and high-quality products with their heavy mag system that connects all the pieces together. I mean, it really is... It's really difficult to have your card be damaged in that kind of way. And honestly, being able to have my dice box being connected to my playmat, it allows me to just kind of effortlessly go from the classroom to the game store. So,
well, you know what, Billy? You also forgot about their actually like sleek, rounded edge design for their sleeves that just, you know, feels so great in the hand.
Oh, man. Yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah, it helps so much with the curve. You're shuffling all day. You're playing your 14 rounds with this RC. It's 1,300 people. It's super hot. You got the curved sleeve, though, and your palm, not going to get chapped, not going to get worried, not going to get, you know, scraped up. It's really important. Yeah.
Look, I'll say it. That is the best sponsor transition that anybody has ever seen it in the history of audio, at least.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That one gets stars. Everything else, don't do again. That one, though.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, I guess with that, I'm not sure if you saw this. Obviously, there were some hijinks on MTGO over the weekend. So if you are interested in trying to play a little bit more Magic, you got some cool stuff you saw at the RC you want to play. If you're playing Magic Online, you can, of course, go and get a Brewer's Pass. It gets you access to any card. It got extended for another week, so you can keep playing that if you're interested in doing that. Just a couple extra days. But also, if you are trying to pick up some cards in paper, maybe you're getting ready for the next RC, or maybe you're getting ready for the next RCQ season. I know that's in full swing, playing Standard. Hit up our other sponsor, Magnolia Games. They have a great selection, great buy list. Check them out and use our affiliate code so that they know that you came from us. It helps everybody, and obviously you can put your Magnolia cards into heavy play sleeves. It's a match made in heaven. All right. Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
No. I'm trying to think, like, as far as, like, upcoming, what do people need to keep an eye out here? Chicago's next week, isn't it? Like, that's the next big thing? At least for...
Is it next week?
It's gotta be. Jeez. Is it next week or 2 weeks? Am I crazy?
It probably... No, I mean, you... Jeez. Oh, man.
If it is next week... It's the 20... Okay, it's not this weekend. It's the 23rd. Okay. So...
Okay.
2 weekends from now. I think that's the next big thing for U.S. at least. Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, besides that, I'm mentally waiting for the SCG Valley Forge Convention Center. I know there are some other things. I thought someone was, like, talking about, like, a GalaxyCon, I think that is. Friend, I believe, Michael Arrowsmith, I believe, has had judging... CDH event there, or maybe it's the modern event. It's like a modern 15K.
I saw, which is insane.
Yeah, I am interested in that. There also is like a CEDH event where winner gets a set of duels, like a 10 duels.
Pretty good. Which
is also, yeah, I want to go. Okay, let me start here. So I would like to go play in one of those events. The weekend itself is not great. It's the 16th. It's March 16th, which is the same weekend as BCDL, which I could go to. I do obviously love supporting Buffalo Chicken Dip Legacy, but I think it'd be easier for me to get to Richmond and to have people go to Richmond with me than it is for them to go to Ohio. So that's like the one thought there. But also, I really want to play CEDH. But I really should probably play in the modern event. I think that's probably, in terms of EV, I think it's probably better for me, so.
Well, I mean, 10 duels.
10 duels, yeah. I don't know. But there also is, if you are big into the Command Fest, they did announce a bunch of those coming up from, like, April to August. I'm not sure. Have you been to a Command Fest yet?
I have, yeah. What was the... You're making me blank on it. What was the one that we had near us?
We had one in Philly.
Okay, so, I just went to Philly then. I was going to say, my brain wasn't working. I didn't know if it was, like, D.C. or if it was actually in Philly, but...
Well, there was a D.C. one as well, I believe. I think it was one of the earlier ones.
I might have actually been to the D.C. one then.
Okay. Yeah, there's... I don't think we got lucky this time in terms of where you and I live, but, you know, internationally, they did a really good job. You know, if you're in the... beautiful United States, you get to potentially go to Dallas or San Francisco. Maybe you want to go to Atlanta sometime in June, which actually sounds like a really lovely time. But there are a couple in Birmingham, England, a couple in China, Vancouver gets one. Oh, Tacoma, Washington. I forgot that was the United States as well. Sydney, Australia, and it looks like Frankfurt, Germany as well. So, you know, plenty of different Command Fest if you're interested in that kind of thing. I think as far as modern and legacy is concerned, I think we're at the end. So, been a good time. It's been a good time.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to look forward to, though, just from the sounds of it. Especially, like you said, like locally for us. I know we actually are going to have a busy couple of months here. We're gonna get the rare Billy Mitchell in person. People, he's getting outside. It's gonna be, whew, wow.
Yeah, I went to a pre-release. Well, I guess last week, and literally is like, who are these people? Do I know this? Am I at the right place? I just like, you know, besides you and, you know, like our two friends, right? I'm just like, I don't know any of these people. So, I gotta get out more. I gotta apparently get vitamin D. Is that what that is?
Maybe touch grass. Maybe I don't know. I was gonna say, is that a forest? Is that what you just you're doing that on Moto, right? You know?
Oh my gosh, all day. Usually destroying people with the witness.
Given my attempts with green, the scene sees reclaim. Untapped sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox Diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red LaCrevy knights crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface looks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward going for the kill. But death shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street rave's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.